Well, hey, thoughtful leader, welcome to The Thoughtful Entrepreneur. On this show, I interview purpose-driven founders, experts, and change makers who are making a real impact in the world. Want to be a guest? Simple. Go to upmyinfluence.com and click podcast. I'd love to promote your story to our audience of over 100,000 and across over 2,300 daily episodes and counting. Want to get booked on other great shows like this? Simple. Go to podverified.com and get your free guest authority score. Thousands of hosts are looking for high-quality guests, and PodVerified connects you the right way. Now, let's dive into today's episode. With us right now, Joseph Bergen. Joseph, you're the co-founder of Commonwealth M&A. You're found on the web at commonwealthmna.com. We have that link in the show notes. Joseph, it's great to have you.
Thanks, Josh, for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, before we get going and talking about your superpowers, you know, love just having a, you know, just finding out what you know, leaders are into in their private personal lives, you know, things that they're geeking out on or hobbies or things that they're kind of experiencing. What say you? What's been big in your life lately?
Well, I wish there was time to geek out on stuff because I am, you know, I consider myself a geek on a lot of topics, but I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, 2 girls at home. So the majority of the time has been spent with them, corralling them. You know, if I think we've watched Monsters, Inc., what, 50 times in the last week. So if you have any questions on that topic, yeah. I'm geeking out and an expert on that. A lot of Moana, a lot of Pixar.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the extent of it these days.
Sure. What are the favorite scenes from Monsters, Inc.?
I love the scene, the sushi scene when they're at the restaurant, when Mike has his girlfriend and Boo, the child comes in and everyone freaks out. My daughter just loves it. Absolutely loves it. My 3-year-old.
I think all of us now who have had kids at that age, remember, you know, what those movies were. For whatever reason, you know, we had, this is back in the day, we had Snow White on DVD. And yeah, there was the one scene toward the beginning where it's a little scary, where Snow White's running through the woods and the trees get all spooky. You know, that was always the one where we're like, oh, you know, you had to get through that one. But then after that, there's not overly scary parts of Monsters, Inc., is there?
No. No,
okay.
No, yeah. She absolutely loves it. No.
Good. Well, Joseph, share with me what Commonwealth is, what you do.
Yeah. So I think put super simply, you know, what we do and what our mission statement is as a company is, you know, we try to transform decades of hard work into, you know, the deal of an individual's lifetime. So how we do that, we are a sell-side M&A advisory firm. So we help businesses with, call it, you know, between $5 and $100 million of revenue. We help business owners exit their businesses. So we do that through a structured process. We spend a lot of time preparing that business for sale, positioning the business as best as possible, performing buyer research to identify who we think the highest paying buyers are out in the market. We then, you know, take the business out, negotiate the transaction, and ultimately shepherd it through diligence into closing. So it's a, you know, it's a 6 to 9 month process. It's a long process, but that's, you know, our primary function at Commonwealth M&A.
Yeah. We'll talk about the types of companies that you work with, because it seems like you specialize in SMBs and, you know, maybe companies that might be on the even smaller side. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Accurate? Absolutely. So we're industry agnostic. We will represent, you know, pretty much any industry, although we are quick to turn something away if we just don't think we're most equipped for it. For whatever reason, we've carved out this really great niche in home services. So HVAC, plumbing, electrical, roofing, landscaping. And I think a lot of that is a function of the size and types of buyers that we work with. You know, both me and my co-founder, you know, come from the trades. We grew up in blue collar families. We really appreciate and respect working with those types of owners. I think it's just, we found ourselves into this niche because it's where we are creating the most value.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about for just a moment, a services company and what's unique about that, and who's buying those companies? Why are those great companies to buy? Do you mind just kind of giving us a picture of like,
Yeah,
what it's like to work in that
absolutely.
space?
And I'll try not to ramble because I am so passionate about these types of businesses. And I think the market is really starting to appreciate how great these businesses are.
Yes,
Plumbing,
that's
HVAC,
I yes,
electrical.
I've heard, yeah.
So there's a ton of M&A activity in this space. And all of that is really a function of what's happening in private equity. So private equity are establishing platform businesses all over the country and then going out and trying to add on and tie together a lot of these smaller mom and pop HVAC, plumbing, electrical type businesses. And what makes it attractive to private equity, like I had said, I think they discovered how great of an industry this is one, how resilient it is through economic cycles. I think nowadays, I know my generation for sure is not living without air conditioning, right? So if something happens to my HVAC system, I'm paying someone to come out and fix it. Two, it tends to be very highly recurring revenue. So a lot of what you see in the software industry that makes that so attractive and valuable is almost as equally applicable to the HVAC industry, right? These systems need serviced year in and year out. You see a lot of these companies pushing maintenance contracts. It's a way to really boost that ARR or that annual recurring revenue. So it's a little bit like a software business, but it's a trade. And then in addition to that, this is happening in a lot of industries, but mostly the trade. Finding highly qualified, skilled employees is incredibly difficult. And that's why, expanding through acquisition makes the most sense for private equity because as part of an acquisition, you might be acquiring 20 to 25 technicians that who knows how long that would take to fill organically at an existing platform. So that's really the fuel behind the M&A engine within private equity in this industry.
Right. So the value is that the talent that that you're after, because that
Trained
gets
talent.
tough.
Yep. Absolutely.
So your background's in P&G, and so why going to M&A?
So it was J&J, very similar to
I'm sorry, Jeff,
P&G.
quite nice. I'm so
No
sorry. Not Procter &
problem.
Gamble, Johnson
No
&
problem.
Johnson, the other big
Yeah.
CPG conglomerate.
Yeah, I absolutely loved my time at J&J and could have saw myself staying there for, 40 to 50 years. It was a fantastic experience. Got to work with a ton of incredibly smart people. I think for me, I had mentioned that my family is a blue collar background. We grew up in the trades. From a family of small business owners, there was always something missing in that corporate experience in terms of ownership of my own company. And, when me and my co-founder were brainstorming this idea of Commonwealth M&A, to me, it was the perfect combination of skill sets between me and my partner, my co-founder. But in addition, I used to do M&A at J&J. I used to work in the trades as a kid, all through high school and college. So it was a perfect blend of skill sets, right? The ability to communicate well with our clients, but then also able to speak the language of private equity when they're acquiring these businesses. I thought there was a lot of value that we could add as Commonwealth M&A to that process.
If you are advising, and I would imagine you've had these conversations maybe a little bit early, let's with a services-based company, and they say, well, look, I don't want to sell today, but I do in maybe 3 to 5 years. What should I be doing today so that I can really have a great exit?
So let me first of all say that that's the best client that there possibly is
Yeah,
because
right.
they're thinking ahead and they're preparing, and those types of situations are where we're able to derive the most value in a transaction. I'd say there's a lot of things, but that time for preparation buys you time to fix a lot of things that will become valuable in a transaction. I'd say first and foremost, it's hard to do this. Start to think about your business as a cash flow producing asset instead of a job. So what that means is try to remove yourself from the day-to-day and empower your employees because a lot of our sophisticated buyers, they aren't interested in necessarily running the business day-to-day. They want to own the business and sharing the economics of that business. But a self-sustaining machine as a company is going to trade for a much higher valuation than a business that's fully dependent upon the owner. Long way of saying that buyers don't want to buy a job, they want to buy a business, right? Number two, and this is common, especially in SMBs, is get the books cleaned up. Right. If you're not on top of your numbers, find a new CPA to help you get on top of your numbers. Ensure that you're accounting for, this is a little technical, you're accounting for things on a GAAP basis as best as you can, not on a cash basis. Try to remove the personal expenses.
Just explaining that just for a second, what that means.
Yeah. So I think the most simple example is in revenue. So, you know, cash basis revenue, you would record your revenue whenever you're paid for your services, mm-hmm. right? That would include things like deposits. You're reporting as revenue for future work. What the buyers want to see is an accrual basis of accounting, meaning you earn the revenue when the activity is actually completed. So you might accept a deposit for future work, but you're not recognizing that as revenue on your books until you actually go out and complete the work. It's incredibly important. You know, if we see a company that comes to us that is on cash basis, we try to get them switched to accrual before we go out to market. It does cost some time. But financials are everything in these transactions. Obviously, yeah. The owner dependency is a big thing, but the financials are equally as important.
I have seen, and maybe you have some observation on this. I've seen a lot of the services-based companies really trying to encourage consumers to get on a monthly recurring service plan. You know, obviously that's dependable income for the company. And any observations on that? Is my assumption correct that that's a
yeah,
big push?
100%
and investors
correct.
Like that?
100% correct. And especially after it comes under private equity ownership, you can bet that that's a model that will be pursued. Yeah. And the reason for that is, yes, obviously the annual recurring revenue is great. But really where the value comes, if you think about a service, you know, a field service business, whether it's HVAC, plumbing, or electrical, it's another touch point with that consumer to be in the home, right? A lot of these HVAC businesses also have plumbing businesses. They might take a peek at the water heater while they're there, mention to the consumer, hey, just so you're aware, this water heater is on its last leg. We can, you know, swap it out today for X price. So those monthly recurring, it's monthly recurring revenue, which is incredibly important. I think more critically, it offers an additional connection between that business and their customer to potentially provide incremental service that otherwise wouldn't have been completed.
Okay. Can you tell me a bit maybe about the current environment, the current investor environment? And if you can contrast this maybe to years past, like where are investors today?
Yeah. Absolutely. So where we play in the lower middle market, like the size range that I described, SMBs, you know, $5 to $75 to $100 million in revenue. We haven't really felt any reduction in activity, in M&A activity versus years past. That is not what I've heard and have researched and understand that's happening
yes.
in the large scale transactions. And I think there's a few reasons for that. Number one, I think it's mostly a supply and demand dynamic that's at play. Number one, private equities have raised record amounts of dry powder. So money that's on the sidelines ready for them to deploy. Coming out of COVID, they weren't really investing. We've reached record highs as it relates to how much money from private equity is able to be deployed into businesses. I think the environment we're in right now with, call it higher than, well, it's historically probably average interest rates, but higher than the last 10 to 15 years interest rates. We've seen a lot of activity come down market. So a lot of large private equity firms that are chasing, you know, $1 to $2 billion deals are coming down market, competing with mid-market firms, and mid-market firms are now coming down market into the SMB world. So from our perspective, you know, there's a lot of buyers out there with a lot of deep pockets. So from our perspective, especially in home services, we have not felt any type of dip versus prior years. I think in addition to that as well, I described this whole model around private equity and the platforms and add-ons. That dynamic is occurring across a variety of industries. And the only businesses that really qualify for that add-on definition are SMBs. So those are three drivers from my perspective that are really keeping transactions active at the level that we play at.
Mm. So for those that are listening to our conversation and they may or may not be ready for a conversation with you, or are you, I don't know if you're contributing thought, if you're creating resources online, what is available for the general public from the work that Commonwealth does?
Yeah. So first I would encourage you to, you know, check our website and LinkedIn. We're constantly posting content there for consumption. Otherwise, I mean, there's so many podcasts that are out there around M&A and SMB. It's a really hot topic right now, especially with the wealth transfer that's on the horizon. You know, that people talk about, you know, the baby boomers are the primary owners of these businesses that we're selling. And there's a lot of interest about, who's going to eventually own those businesses and what does that process look like? So there's endless opportunities, or there's endless opportunities to learn online about this topic.
Yeah. Okay. So your website, commonwealthmna.com. Well, let me ask you this question. How might someone know that they should reach out to you? Who might not be a good fit? And that's a very important question. Again, kind of what their next steps and kind of what those initial conversations might look and sound like.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I'd say I'd encourage everyone to reach out. Number one, we founded this business to help business owners, and whether or not that's an ideal client for us to take on in an official capacity is one thing, but if we can help any business owner, we'll do that through a conversation. Number two, I'd say our ideal client, as it relates to sell side advisory or from an M&A perspective, is probably within that range that I discussed, between $5 to $100 million in revenue, which is a wide bucket. We understand that. And, it doesn't matter to us how far away you think that goal is, because we're willing to work with business owners over the long term. I described those are actually the situations where we're able to create the most value when we can really prepare a business for sale over a period of 2 to 3 years. Those are the types of businesses we love working with.
Yeah. And first, like, what do you typically talk about in a first call or
First
two?
call is high level. We always want to understand the story of the business, why you founded it, where you're at today from a revenue perspective, what's bothering you, what's really great about the business, what's bad about the business, what are your goals from a valuation perspective, and then we can help you triangulate whether or not that's realistic based on the financial profile of your business.
And how do you like, where does Commonwealth get their clients from? Like, how are you growing?
Yeah, it's, now we've been at this for 3 years. A lot of it's coming from former clients, which is the best possible introduction you can have. It's really through connections. It's all been word of mouth. We don't do any advertising. Now we are strategically small. We're only doing, maybe three to four transactions a year. But it's been all to date, it's been all referral based, all through relationships, all through our prior clients that we've represented through the process.
Excellent. All right. CommonwealthMNA.com. Joseph Bergen, again, you're the co-founder. Thank you so much for the conversation. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Josh.
If you've enjoyed this conversation, I'd love to invite you to share your message with the world at podverified.com, where thousands of podcast hosts and thoughtful guests are connecting the right way. Podverified helps match you with the right stages for your level of authority. No more wasting time on brand new shows that just aren't a fit. Your guest authority score is free, and so are your first two podcast matches. Come hang out with me there. I'd love to learn more about your business, support your mission, and help promote you far and wide. Just head to www.podverified.com to get started. And of course, if you'd like to be a guest right here on The Thoughtful Entrepreneur, just go to upmyinfluence.com and click on podcast. Thanks for being a part of this movement. We rise by lifting others.